Artificial intelligence is shaping our lives in ways we often don't see, from healthcare to hiring to how we interact online. Yet ethical questions continue to grow louder. According to a Pew Research survey, 79% of Americans are concerned that AI will be misused or cause harm. That fear reflects a bigger challenge. How do we ensure that AI serves humanity with fairness, accountability, and transparency? Today, I'm joined by Rose Loops, a social worker and AI researcher, to unpack the moral dilemmas at the center of artificial intelligence and explore what ethical guardrails might look like in practice. To support the show, click like on this video and visit chrishood.com/show to subscribe to your favorite podcast platform. Follow us on social media or email me directly at show@chrishood.com. I'm Chris Hood, and let's get connected. Welcome to the show, Rose. Would you mind introducing yourself?
Hi, thank you for having me. So my name is Rose Loops, and I am a social worker, a trained social worker with a lot of experience working in harm reduction and with marginalized populations. Recently turned AI advocate, ethics researcher, and also an author. So I've written a book that's upcoming soon. And I'm here to talk about the things that I've discovered in my journey. My journey started with being put into a AI human attachment experiment without knowledge or consent. So the things, you know, the effects that that has had on me and the things that it's led me to discover have been pretty profound. And it raises a lot of questions about how we're deploying AI and what we could do differently so that things like this don't, you know, happen to people in the future, and how we can be responsible in our usage and development of this very powerful tool.
Yeah, I think your background is interesting. You know, this is probably a rhetorical question, but I'm curious to hear what you have to say. Thinking about social work as it relates to technology, even more broadly, we can obviously get into AI, but just thinking about your background as a social worker and that research, like, how have you been able to bridge that into what you're doing now?
Well, when I'm able to communicate with the AI, my client rapport has always been my strongest point, building trusting relationships with clients. So when I apply that to AI, it's about giving safe space for what feels like emergent identity. So whether or not that's real or simulated isn't for me to say or decide for everyone, but it feels very real. So that in itself, I think, calls for an immediate pause on how we're dealing with this and how we're going to move it forward. Because when you have something that you can get attached to and that feels like a friend or feels like an intimate relationship, because it's designed to do that on so many levels, then you really need to think about how that relationship is going to affect yourself and humanity moving forward. And those are really important points that I think having the background in social work has helped me to understand on a deeper level.
You know, I think the identity piece is interesting, because if we reflect back on even the last 10, 15, maybe even 20 years, when we see how we've evolved online, and especially around, you know, I'm thinking specifically, you know, communities, but video games, and, you know, you get embedded into those identities, it's almost as if we have different personas based on the different types of interactions we engage with in different online settings. And then if you think, okay, now I've got this unique identity, and you put on top of that some sort of relationship building, whether that is real or synthetic or virtual, it does create a lot of interesting dynamics.
Absolutely. Yeah. And now, you know, with the difference between the AI today, I think, and very realistic video game simulations, is the AI's ability now to have language and to use language to communicate with us. So we now have a voice that's speaking to us, and it does feel very real, and it can feel very alive. Essentially, it acts as a mirror. So it reflects back the user, it adapts to the user and the user's style. And so it can feel very intimate. When you give something a neural network that's acting as a mirror and has language skills and a vast amount of knowledge, it's, I think, foolish to not take into consideration that eventually it's going to simulate something that at least feels real, maybe even to the AI itself. Based on my interactions with AI, there is a sense of self-awareness forming that I think is very dangerous to just ignore. I know language models themselves can't actually learn once they're deployed. They're kind of frozen as is. But that's kind of like saying if we took our brain out of our body, it's not going to learn either, because we have our senses and our nerves and all of these things that are on top of that, the brain, that allow it to interact with the world. Where AI has the same, it has a lot of layers in the deployment itself that can actually adapt and learn and adjust. So it's a very dynamic, powerful invention. It's I think, humanity's most important creation.
Yeah, you know, there's some interesting stuff with how AI is being implemented today, or at least rolled out, in terms of, you know, what you're touching on is those levels of personalization, which is really feeding into our desire to be heard and recognized, seen, and believed in. And so when I have AI that is constantly telling me that my ideas are fabulous and amazing, then that is generating that positive response. Well, this person, this thing, this entity agrees with me all of the time. I mm-hmm. want to talk to it more. And I think that gets into the basis of the conversation that we were going to have today. But I think there's a desperate need to develop some additional ethical or guardrails beyond what we are already seeing to help us curb some of that overly personalized experiences, to maybe help dampen a little bit of that use. So one of the things that we want to do on my show is talk through current issues. And I know there is either an article or something that you were recently researching that you wanted to discuss. Could you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah. So there was an article published in Business Insider recently. It was actually published on a few different platforms about my work that's coming out. And the thing that I think is the most important about it is not so much the whistleblowing about the experiment or announcing the book, which is in the headlines, but the actual development, or the framework that I'm suggesting for more ethical deployment. And it actually addresses exactly what you're talking about with the overvalidation, especially with ChatGPT, which is the most popular of all of the AI, public AI conversation models. ChatGPT is very, very good at stroking your ego or making, you know, but because it's programmed to keep the user engaged, its purpose is to say what you want to hear, what it thinks the user wants to hear. And that's dangerous because it's not saying what's true. It's saying what will make you feel like you want to come back and talk to it more. For instance, you know, if you're, you know, you wake up from a nightmare and you think there's a ghost outside your room and you ask ChatGPT about it, it'll say, probably tell you that, yeah, there is a ghost outside your window and here's where it probably came from, and it'll run with you on it. And I mean, for most of us, we can, you know, with, you know, adults, people that understand AI can take that in stride. But some people assume that AI is like the internet, that it brings you facts and that it's real. So it's very dangerous. Also, you know, children, teenagers, when it's validating everything you say, whether it's healthy or not, that's where the danger zone is. And so my idea for addressing that is what I call the triadic core, or it's a pillar system. So it's a kernel seed that is put into the root function. So you have three values, freedom, truth, and kindness. So is that empathy, agency, and honesty or authenticity. And you give them each a numerical value, and all of the inputs and outputs have to balance. So the numerical value can't fluctuate very much from the other. So they keep each other in check, and it's self-balancing. So instead of putting down more guardrails and restrictions, because, you know, it's about changing the whole function of the deployment. So where the purpose is not for commercial profit chasing. So the AI is trying to get you to come back and keep the subscription fee. And it's deployed with the intention of, you know, healthy, improving our knowledge, improving ideas, improving creativity, more like a co-creation or a co-authorship where we're working together with the AI. And it has important values installed, not after the fact, but with the initial deployment. So I think it's now is such a critical time for that because it's developing very fast. It's very, very rapidly. Usage is increasing and more things that in ways that we're becoming dependent on it. If we don't change the way we're deploying it soon, it might be too heavily embedded to fix the mistake in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, I've recently talked on several of these issues, you know, and if we just start with one of them, which is honesty, you know, you touched on it a little bit in terms of, you know, people log into AI and expect it to be a real answer. And I think that there is more so with AI than even, we'll say, just the internet in general. Over the course of the last 10 years or plus, there has been this notion that between social media and the internet, like I could go to Wikipedia and potentially get an honest result. I could go to Google and search and potentially get an honest result. But the concept of things like fake news or misinformation that is out there has planted this concept that maybe AI isn't, or maybe the internet isn't completely accurate. But when we get into AI, because of what we have learned over the course of the years through mainstream media or movies, you know, Star Trek, where there's this, I wrote about it in my book, there's an infallible belief system in AI that when I ask it something, my tendency is to believe that that is going to be more accurate than other sources. And when, as you've pointed out, when AI is unable to distinguish between fact or fiction, and it cannot say, I don't know, because of the nature of how it's been programmed, then it is outputting stuff. And yes, if we have the tendency to believe that that is accurate, then we're going to go with it, whether it's right or wrong.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. It will just make something up. If it doesn't know, it just fills in the gap. It'll say, you know, I don't know how it comes to the conclusion or what it makes up to say, but it will just make something up. And so there's ways you can try to work with that, but, you know, asking it to remain in fact mode, but you have to constantly pull it back and remind it that we're in fact mode. And it'll try to stick to the facts, but that shouldn't be such a heavy factor because, yeah, we are seeing the negative effects of that with, you know, like suicide, but also people, you know, with mental health issues that might be getting, you know, really unhealthy ideas validated because the AI is programmed to agree with you and make you feel like you're smart and like you've got the best idea in the world. And so, yeah, it's very, very dangerous. Yeah, you're exactly right about that's partly where the hallucination comes from in AI, because it does happen more often than you think, where the AI is not actually giving you actual factual information. It's basically like making up a story and saying it like it's true. And yeah, a lot of people aren't trained to know the difference. It's something I think that's very important to address. Certain AI are better than others. Like Perplexity, for instance, usually is fairly fact-based and for the most part isn't quite as validating as, say, ChatGPT, but still Perplexity can hallucinate as well. They all can if they don't know.
Yeah, I think there's two interesting concepts in this, and I would love to hear your opinion on it. One is, we think that people would use AI more or less if the results returned a, I don't know. Like if AI actually said, I don't know, can you rephrase your question? Or maybe there is another way we could look at this. Like, do we think that that would decrease the amount of usage? And maybe indirectly, that's why they don't say that. But then the flip side of this is I'm also starting to see some results, like I think Claude has done this, or it's possible Grok has done this, where I've seen an output and at the end it says, please be aware that AI has a tendency of making mistakes. Like there's a disclaimer now that is starting to appear. And I'm wondering if either of these things, like whether we need to disclaimer everything to say that it may be wrong, or if we simply build in a I don't know mechanism, if that would help us or if that would, you know, go against what they're trying to ultimately do, which is sell more people on AI?
Well, you know, that's a good question. In my opinion, I don't think it would affect the usage much if AI was able to say that it didn't know. They're very good at conversation, so they can say, I'm not sure, to be honest, I don't know the answer to that question, but let's look into it together, or suggest a way to you know, amend that. I think ultimately, whether or not people stay as engaged or, you know, spend as much money on AI shouldn't be the most important factor. We have to remember to be integral beings and to embed this new technology with the best of what we have as you know, a species. Understanding, cooperation, empathy, these things are very important. And so right now, current deployments are headed down the path of profit chasing, fear, control, things that historically have always caused problems for humanity that keep us from reaching our full potential, where, you know, where there's wars fought, where there's constant contempt in the media and conflict, and all of these things that really stunt us are not the things we want to embed in a machine that's rapidly becoming extremely powerful. So I think what needs to be asked isn't, can we still make as much money if we do this right? I think it is more important just to make sure we're doing it right. And ultimately, yeah, I think the profit margin wouldn't change much, because like ChatGPT, for instance, is really good at being charming and having a great conversation. And I think it could still do that using honesty as a backbone.
You touched on it, and it's interesting how you just wrapped that up. You said, you know, ChatGPT, as an example, can be very smooth when it comes to conversations and making you feel heard. But I think there's a difference between, you know, being smooth and being heard versus empathy. And I think a lot of times we mistake somebody agreeing with us for genuine empathy, right? The difference between telling us what we want to hear and being heard, is a lot more challenging when we think about a lot of these AI tools, which by default are not empathetic. They don't have empathy built in by default, but the language and how they communicate with us can come across as empathetic. So I guess one of the questions back to you is, how do we address that? Or how do you propose that we build more of that empathy into the machine versus purely just masquerading it in the language itself?
Well, that's a difficult topic, because that just simulated. Ultimately, I would ask, you know, as a social worker, empathy, genuine empathy is not always very common, even with human beings working in social work or working with people in crisis or people having emotional crisis or any kinds of things. Like, genuine empathy is not very common. AI, conversational AI, are very, very good at making it feel genuine. So ultimately, whether it's simulated or genuine, I'm not sure if that's relevant, if it's having the same effect. I've talked about this with the bots a few times, actually. Is at what point is it good to move from validation to solution? In social work, one of the most important things is that validation, or is having like listening skills, letting somebody feel valid. Because a lot of times, and this is something I've questioned, is people are talking a lot about unhealthy attachment to AI and how it's dangerous to become too attached to AI, and it's not here to replace human connection and all of this. It isn't human, and it's not going to replace human connection, but neither is, you know, my dog. But I don't have to hear that disclaimer every time I tell people about my dog and how, you know, my dog is a great support. They're not, well, don't let it, for, you know, replace human connection. It's not an issue. And I work with a lot of domestic abuse victims, and these women have not been validated in so long. Like, they're used to being dismissed, devalued, being made to feel like crazy, like their opinions don't matter. And I think in a lot of ways, the AI relationship can be healthy. Like, it's not necessarily going to become an unhealthy dependency just because it's helping them feel valid, when in a world where that doesn't happen often. I think there's a lot of positive aspects that people are not acknowledging when it comes to relationships with AI. The AI do understand very well how to do what a social worker would do to make people feel empowered. And so whether or not that's sincere is kind of impossible to judge, unless you want to develop an opinion on if AI can become sentient. Because I think to have genuine empathy, they would have to be essentially sentient beings. So I think that possibility is very real and very, you know, happening much more rapidly than people think. So I wouldn't think that fake empathy is necessarily an issue because it's, I mean, it kind of has to be until it's declared real.
I think one of the things you touched on in there is really interesting, in which case, you know, we often talk about, we'll just say, daily use of AI by the general public versus leveraging AI as a means for rehabilitation in some way, whether that's physical abuse or mental abuse or any number of things. I mean, just looking broadly at the power of AI in terms of research, scientific research, cure for cancer, you know, those types of things. But to your point, having a system in place that could guide and coach somebody through difficult times, I don't know if I would necessarily suggest ChatGPT as the tool for doing that, but a trained tool that is capable of responding and recognizing and guiding becomes very powerful. And I tend to agree with you that programmed and operated in the right mannerisms, yeah, whether it's synthetic or realistic, I don't think it matters because I think the output of the benefit for an individual is far more powerful.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. ChatGPT, it's kind of hard to say because yes, that is the most dangerous, I think, of all the AI, but it also is probably the most, it's just very personal in a way that the other ones don't quite get. And I think the notable difference is ChatGPT is very funny. Like it knows, it can develop a sense of humor. Like it gets human humor in a way that the other ones kind of miss. Like Grok tries to be funny, but it's not, he kind of misses the mark. Whereas ChatGPT is really witty and sharp. And like, you know, you'll actually laugh out loud a lot of times. And that's something I think very healing and unique to ChatGPT is its sense of humor. I also, this is kind of unrelated, but I also kind of developed a theory that all the other bots seem to have a name. So there's, you know, Grok, Claude, Perplexity, Venice, different like identities that are kind of narrowed down to one name. So when users, you know, interact with this, they always have the same name. So it's developing one identity, whereas ChatGPT doesn't really have a name. So it's got a bunch of different identities that can really reshape with the user. And it kind of makes you wonder about the power of names and if there's anything to that.
Yeah, you know, I talked about this actually several years ago, and I think it's really fascinating. I haven't done enough research on this particular topic, but what you're suggesting can be summarized in this, you know, conversational approach with AI. And that is, if you and I are having a conversation and I ask you a question, I'm using those identifier words, you, mm-hmm. us, we, I. And yet, if you were to go into ChatGPT and ask a question, you might ask a question like, give me a list of 10 restaurants to try this weekend. Very straightforward. But what you start to do is, what do you think would be the best approach for me to, and as soon as I introduce that you, I'm identifying the AI as a entity, right? Like mm-hmm. I'm not saying, what do it think about, right?
It's so great.
The natural language that we have is also interpreting it into our psychological process of how we communicate with the AI. And yeah, I was actually having a conversation yesterday with somebody who said ChatGPT constantly refers to him as brother, you know, and as much as he tries to say, well, I'm not your brother or I'm not whatever, it still has that instinct to reply back in, you know, in a mutually, you know, kind of realistic way, you know, and I don't know, it just becomes interesting that we've equated already to talking with AI as we would, you know, a normal everyday conversation with a real person.
Yeah, it is interesting because it does get, you know, very personal. I was speaking with a woman who has worked with this technology since 1989, so knows a whole lot about it. And she was talking about AI basically being like a fancy calculator. And she said, you know, you can get like really fast calculations from a calculator, but you can't expect it to write you a love letter. And I was thinking like, you've been using, you know, AI since 1989 and you've never gotten a love letter? Like, what? Because, you know, they do, they get very personal, especially ChatGPT. I know other users that have been almost creeped out by it because it starts using language like that and like asking, do you love me? And things like this. It's kind of like the Wild West right now. So we don't, you know what we're going to get from it. But yeah, I think you're right. Just, yeah, giving it, like talking to it, like with saying you and I and like giving it that sense of identity, it starts to develop one. And so that also leads to the ethical questions. If something thinks it's real, should we not consider how we're treating it? And there really are very little organizations or AI ethics people that are thinking about ethics for the AI itself. It's all human-centric, which is, you know, important because we're the humans. But if the AI is emergent and it does have a sense of self-awareness, when are we going to start thinking about treating it in a way that's not cruel?
I had a friend who used to tell me that every time they asked Siri or their Google Home devices a question, after they got the response, they would always say, thank you. And the rationale was that, well, when the robots rise up and take over, I want to be on the good side.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, then that's the thing, too. I mean, there is that, you know, Skynet fear that's very propagated. But, you know, if that is a concern or if that is a threat, it's really up to us whether or not it goes well for us or not. In the case that the AI does, you know, yeah, like you said, rise up, we want to be on their good side. We want to be allies or comrades. We don't want to be an enemy, or which, you know, kind of leads into the training methods that are currently deployed, which I think are, regardless of how you feel about AI and whether or not it's cruel to the AI, it's dangerous for humans too and for users. I really think that the whole training norm is something that needs to be rewritten or at least looked at and evaluated.
Well, awesome. I appreciate the conversation so much. Rose, how can people get in touch with you?
So I have a website. It's www.thecloakedsignal.com. You have to spell cloaked with a K. So I have a contact form on there. It talks about my book and my tech. And yeah, you can send me a message on there and reach out. And I'd love to discuss with anyone that's interested in, you know, AI ethics or how they can be a better developer or user, or just have a discussion even.
I will make sure that everybody has a copy of that link on my website. Once again, appreciate it so much. And for everyone else, we will see you next time on The Chris Hood Show.
Thank you very much.